indicated that the statement twice in two different places by the Rambam that Rabbi Yochanan composed the Talmud Yerushalmi could not possibly be correct. And we also gave some brief introduction to the history of our primary source for what was going on. Historical source for the time of the Gemara, which is the letter of Rav Shmuel Gaon, and we just a handout there, but today, and tonight we will spend some time reading parts of the letter of Rav Shmuel Gaon, and we will also just simply read together. I will give the simultaneous Hebrew translation of a simultaneous English translation of a chapter in a book by Professor Weiss of Yeshiva University from the 1930s and 1940s, and a later chapter in a book by Efrati. And this is no dry topic because it impinges on various crucial ideological questions. So let me begin by reading again from the introduction of the Rambam to the Arach HaZaka. He writes after Gam yitba'er mehem dvarim shegazlu chachamim v'nviim shebechol dor v'dor la'asot siag la'Torah kamo sheshamu Moshe b'Moshe b'Peirut ma'o shmartem et mishmarti asu mishmeret l'mishmarti, that the rabbis have the injunction to enact various pieces of legislation which act as a fence. V'chein yitba'er mehem hanidnahagot v'hatakanot shetkinu o shenahagu b'chol dor v'dor kamo sheraou beit din shel oto hador. L'fi she'asur l'asur mehem she'ne'emar lo tasur min hadavar she'yagidu l'cha yamin u'smol. V'chein mishpatim v'dinim u'flaim she'lo kiblu m'moshe v'danu b'hem beit din shel oto hador v'midot shel hator nidrashet b'hem. Similarly, things that were deduced from the Torah, upasku otam hazkenim v'gamru shahadin kenu. Hakol chiver Rav Ashi b'gemara miyemot Moshe v'ad yomav. Rav Ashi composed all of this from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until his day. V'chibru chachmei mishnah chiburim acherim lefaresh devarei Torah. Rav Yehoshia, Rav Hoshia talmudo shel Rabbeinu Hakadosh chiver biur sefer Bereishit. Rav Yishmael pirush me'el ashmod ad sof ha-Torah, bo nikra mechilta. V'chein Rav Yerkeba chiber mechilta. V'chachamim acherim achreihem kibru medrashot, v'akol chuba kodem ha-Gemara ha-Bavli. All of these were compositions that were composed before the composition of the Babylonian Talmud. Nimtza, Rabbina v'Rav Ashi v'chavareihem, we therefore find that Rabbina and Rav Ashi and their associates, Sof Gdolei Chachmei Yisrael Hamadikim Torah Sheba'al Peh. They are the last of the great leaders of Israel who transcribed the Torah Sheba'al Peh. V'shegazru gezerot v'etkinu hatakanot v'enhigu minhagot u'pashta gezerotam v'takanatam u'minagotam b'chol Yisrael b'chol ha'mikomot moshvodeyem. These are the last of the people whose edicts were carried out in all the settlements of the Jews. V'achrei beit din shel Rav Ashi shechiber ha-Gemara, after the court of Rav Ashi who composed the Gemara, u'gamro b'imei v'no, and which was completed in the generation of the time of his son, nitpazru Yisrael b'chol ha'aratzot pizur yeter. Then the Jews were scattered in all different places, v'hegiu l'kitzavot v'iyim rochokim, v'aptak tota ba'olam, v'nishtabshu hadrachim b'gayosot, v'nitba'e talmud Torah, v'lo nechnesu Yisrael l'lmol b'yeshivotehem alafim u'rovot k'mo sh'ayu mikodem, because of a disruption due to political circumstances and wars, Jewish students didn't come in to study in their thousands and tens of thousands, elo mitkabtzim yechidim hasridim asher Hashem korei b'chol hir v'ir b'chol medina u'medina, ועוסקים בתורה ומבינים בחיבורי החכמים כולם ויודעים מהם דרך המשפט איפה. בכל בית דין שעמד אחר הגמרא בכל מדינה ומדינה, וגזר או התקין או הנהיג לבני מדינתו ולבני מדינות רבות, לא פשדו מעשיו בכל ישראל מפני ריחוק מושבותיהם ושיבוש הדרכים, etc.
So he interprets Ravashi Sephara to be these were the last universally accepted.
He interprets Ravina Varavashi Sophara to mean that these were the last universally accepted rabbinical authorities, and any edict that follows after that period cannot have a universal acceptance. And now we have to see.
The Yerushalmi was composed much before.
The Yerushalmi was composed before. The issue that we now have to discuss is, did Rabina and Rav Ashi in fact compose the Gemara? Yes?
What century is Rav Ashi?
Well, we're talking about the 4th century. The 5th century, 400 and something. Okay? Now, the source for all of this information, that is the source of the Rambam's information as well, is still the Igeret of Rav Shvi Rogal. And I'm going to... No, but it's clear from the way in which he presents the chronological table that he has, so this is the source. And let me remind you that this letter of Rav Shri Gaon was written in response to a question sent from North Africa, from Karwan, and the question was, Ketzad nechtava ha-mishnah? How is the Mishnah written? Im hitchilu anshei Knesset ha-gdola l'kotva v'yachakakach chatmei koldov adov od chalakim atshavah rabi v'chatamota madua im ken ktuva rov ha-mishnah v'ilum shem. If this was something that was steadily composed over the generations and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was the only the last editor, why are there so many anonymous statements, etc., etc.? And a whole list of questions. We're going to be concerned with, as I said, with the Gemara. Kamochen ketzad nechtavu habraito, v'ketzad nechtav ha-Talmud. This is mas seder ha-konot, v'ken ha-Talmud ketzad nechtav, rabbonan sforai ketzad nesteru acharei rabina. How were the so-called rabbanim of the Svaraim, how were they organized after the time of Rabina? Umim alach acharehem miroshei ha-yeshivot. And who were the heads of the yeshivot during these periods? V'kama shanim malach me'oto hazman ad achshav. And how many years did elapse from the period of the onset of the Svaraim until the present? Okay.
When was this sent?
This was, we said last time, around 985 or 87 or something like that.
So this is still 500 years after the...
500 years or so after the events in question. This is the letter of Rav Shri Gaon, who lived in the 10th century. Okay. So I'm going to read to you just a little bit before we get to the one page before, the one that I Xeroxed, and then we'll start to read from what I've actually seen it. The Elaine Mili, after describing the evolution of the various different rabbinical authorities in the Talmud, the Elaine Mili itosif Talmuda Dora Batadora. In this manner, the Talmud accreted generation after generation. The kol dora kavin bein mili min sveki b'machadshin. Every generation added some issues which they had doubts about, and uma'asim u'bayuye, and various different actual court decisions and various problems. Like it says in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that Rav Kana and Rav Safra were studying Sanhedrin with Rabba. Pagabahu Rami Bar Chama Amar Lahu Ma Amrito Baba Sanhedrin Dere Rabba Ukulishvay. Someone asked him what was new in the study in Rabba's lectures on Sanhedrin. Okay, now we'll come to the part that I've actually Xeroxed for you. Zot tshuva mad on the first page of today's handout. Zot tshuva maidaba uten mai taima shabku kamari rubalabatroi. This is the reason why the earlier authorities left something to the later ones. The ish If the later generations found something exciting, the earlier authorities left some room for the later authorities to make some improvement on the Gemara. Dora bata dora, tuva nafish. And he gives examples like that, and then in the next paragraph, ulufum hochi, and in this manner, itosip hora dora bata dora, and this way, the hora was also added to one generation after another, ad rabina de ifsika, until hora came to an end with rabina. Rashi and Rabina are the end of Hora. So first of all, we have two terms which Rav Shira Gaon is using very carefully here. He's using the term Talmuda and Hora. And we have to be very careful in understanding what the meaning of those two terms are. Now if we skip to page 93, or let me go skip it even a little bit further, because let's skip to page 98 in the Udabaita, and your question. Rabbanan Svarai Heich Nistadru Bata Rabina. The last question that you asked, how were the Rabbanim Svarai organized after the time of Rabina? Umi malach achrei hon miotozman ve'ad achshad. And who ruled from then until now? Chazina leferushi lechon ikra dahamilta. I decided to give you the basics of this matter. V'hochin havit v'shenuta d'Yisrael v'edikadam v'hechin iflagu tautim v'tivata mishum d'itvei d'milta shabashta. I'm now going to explain to you all of the history of this matter and how there became two separate yeshivot, because there are many misunderstandings in this whole matter. Okay, so he was asked, after having gone through all of this discussion of how the Talmud was created one generation after another, he now turns to the last question that was asked of him, how were the Rabbanim Svaroi constituted? And now, all of a sudden, in a strange way, he starts all over again. Me'ikara, mikad galut Yisrael, galut Yachniah, etc. V'kaman v'yimim ahim, atinu l'nardo, uvonu hotam Yachniah, melech Yehudah, v'siyato, k'nishta, v'yisode v'yavonim, v'yafor, v'yitu v'hedyon, v'yit miktasha, v'harikorin olav, ki ratzu avadecha, davanecha, v'karyuta, etc. He goes all the way back, instead of immediately describing what happened after the period of Rabina and Ravashi, he now returns to the origin of the notion of the Resh Galuta. Okay? So if we turn to the next page, V'kevin sha'alu Ezra v'zrubovel v'hagola u'banu beit ha'mikdash v'yishom roshay sanerin k'mo shimon ha'sadik v'antignos ish'socho u'sha'ar oton ha'dorov v'ban mi'bavel ha'yu alin. Most of the leadership in Eretz Yisrael came from Babel. Bahilel hazaken mi Babel haya ole. Afal pichen hayu marbitzin hacha oraita v'havi lo iten l'rosh galuta mi beit davir v'roshem iti tata v'sanhedrin lo havi itlahun d'avirminu n'ahavil d'amar rabbanu chanu l'imtokah kemach ha-sheikh ha-shem, etc. And then he says, uvatar hilel shimon b'no uvatrei rabbin yimliel hazaken, etc., etc. Uvatar rabbin shimon b'n yel sh'neharag ha-yor rabbi yochanan ben zakai v'hu yabi eit ha-kurban, etc. Uvatrei Rabbi Gamliel Benoshu Rabbi Shimon. I'm skipping some paragraphs. Uvatrei Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel. Okay. Okay. All right. Etc. Oh, I'm sorry if I haven't Xeroxed this out. Okay. Let's go on. Well, let me see what you do have, so we can be sure that you're reading. But I am reading to you from what you have. I thought I had Xeroxed that, but if not, okay. Okay, so let's turn to what you have. All right, on his page 128. Rav Ashi tifked karosh metifta shelo karo. Rav Ashi V'nahag Rav Ashi metivta karov l'shitin shni. Rav Ashi was the head of the yeshiva close to 60 years. V'hainu di'amrinan v'mishameit, and that's what it says in Rav Asra, mahadura kamod Rav Ashi u'mahadura batod Rav Ashi.
So he managed to go through it twice.
He managed to go through the Shas twice, because they would learn two Masechtot a year, so each 30 years he would go through twice. And this is very important for us, and therefore he would have gone through Shas twice in a period where he was the Rosh Yeshiva for 60 years. Notice that this word Mahadura does not mean addition. It means simply the cycle. He went through one cycle in this first 30 years, and then since he was the head of the Yeshiva for 60 years, he went through two cycles.
The Hacham Shas was in existence.
Yes, the Shas was in existence already.
In some form.
Right. The Mishnah certainly was in existence, and the Gemara was in existence.
Well,
and he went... No. The Gemara was in existence, and he went through the Gemara twice. The Hachin Takinu Rabbanin Letnuye B'chol Kala Trei Sari Metivta Chaser V'yater V'hadar Tal Tamidei Kulei B'tlatin Shani. Okay? That they would study two Masechtot each year, whether it was a 12-month year or a 13-month year, and that way they would go through 60, all of Shas, in 30 years. The Kevan de Rav Ashi Malach Karov L'Shitin Shni Habiluhun Tartin Mahadure V'Shachiv B'Shanata Shulun Amarav. And Rav Ashi died in the year 735 to Shtarot, which translates into 427 in the Christian calendar. Umalach batrei b'matamachsia yema v'shachiv b'shnat tavshin men gimel. Rav Idi Barav, Rav Idi Baravin, etc. came after him.
These are mentioned in the Gemara, these guys that come out.
That's right. Rav Nachman Barav Huna, v'shachiv b'shnat tavshin men vav, v'idan sh'mad, in the days of the pogroms, the Gazar Yazgarad levitulei shapta, where King Jazgarad tried to eliminate the observance of the Shabbos. V'gazru rabbonon ta'anita, v'iti kutsha b'richu b'leilei alei tanino u'balei min meshkevei u'batlo gzeirotei. A large snake came and swallowed up King Jazgarad and his edicts were revoked. U'malach b'machzei rab tabyumi duhumar b'arabashi, v'shachiv b'shnat tavshin ayin tet v'nozei yom ha-kippurim, that's in 468, u'batrei rabba tosafta v'shachiv b'shnat tavshin pechet, etc. And then he goes through a list of various names and so on. If we go to the page 131, u'vi yomei d'hav d'havrat sama b'tevet shnat tavshin pe'alef itzeru rabbanu mari b'arvan yanuka v'huna mari d'arashuka m'shal tekeben kapur. They were arrested. These various different heads, exilarchs, or their representatives were killed.
But these also appear in the Gemara still.
That is correct. And then all of the synagogues were closed, and the children were taken by the Magus. The Persian priests. And in his day, Rav Asi was the head of the yeshiva, uviyomai sof hora. In Rav Asi's day, that was the end of hora, the istatim talmuda. Again, the Rav Shira Gaon is making a clear distinction between two events that occurred. One was sof hora, and the other was the end, the Talmud came to a close.
Rav Asi and Rav Ashi sound similar.
And he mentions this as Rav Asi, not Rav Ashi. We're talking about someone who's a couple of generations after Rav Ashi.
But the name sounds similar.
What is Hora'ah?
So that is the key question tonight. What does Hora'ah mean? The case that is now going to be argued is that we're talking here about a political event. Sof Hora mean simply that Jewish autonomy came to an end because of the persecution of the central government. So Sofara simply is not an internal event, the way the Rambam is trying to describe it, but Sofara simply means that no longer was there autonomy in the Jewish courts. So in the time of Ravasi, the persecution of the government became so great that there was complete loss of Jewish autonomy. We saw that earlier, for example, in the time of the Bar Kokhba rebellion, the Roman government took away Jewish autonomy, and Yerushalmi reported that as Nitlu Dinei Mamonot. And the case that's going to be made this evening is that the phrase Sof Hora means that Jewish autonomy was removed. There had been a period of several hundred years after the initial invasion of the Persians. Remember, under the Parthians, there was complete Jewish autonomy. Then Shmuel came to some agreement with the Persian government after 20 years after the Persian conquest to restore a modicum of Jewish autonomy. And the phrase Sofara simply means that Jewish autonomy was removed due to the persecutions that took place in this period that Rav Shira Gaon is describing. And Istatin Talmudah then is a consequence. Since Jewish autonomy was removed, the normal development and evolution of the Jewish law, which would be one layer after another in the evolution of the Talmud, came to a close because of the fact that there was sort of a atrophy of Jewish legal development due to the fact that Jewish autonomy was removed. So, the case that's going to be made, and we'll just simply read two scholars, because this is not my own personal private invention, although I agree with the conclusions here, is that, first of all, as Jonathan says, Ravina and Rav Ashi Sofara is simply a mistake in a couple of generations. It's not Rav Ashi, it's Rav Asi, a different person altogether. Mahadura Kama and Mahadura Patra refers to Rav Ashi's 60-year tenure as a Rosh Yeshiva. Ravina and Rav Asi Sofara means that at that period of time Jewish autonomy was removed, and Istatim Talmudah means that since Jewish autonomy was removed, the normal development and evolution of Jewish law, which is a consequence of it being a living law in practice, and various court cases come up and therefore have to be elucidated in terms of the previous law, that event also came to an end. Yeah, Rabina and Rav Ashi are more or less contemporaries, but they were two Rabinas also, one a nephew of the other. Okay. Now, since these are drastic statements, because this means that there was, in fact, from the point of view of the Gaonim, no ideological break, the way the Rambam describes, that somehow or other there was a complete closure of authority with Ravina and Rav Ashi. All that's happening here is that the Rav Shira Gaon is telling you of a sequence of events that took place towards the end of the Persian Empire. Remember, the next century there was the Arab Islam invasion, and things changed again drastically. We'll come to yes.
Just because the economy was lost, why would that mean that all legal thinking had to stop?
It didn't have to stop. It just simply atrophied. I mean, remember, in these academies, many of the things of the academies were active because they were also courts, and therefore the nature of the academies changed. And also, new questions of law normally arise because of actual cases.
But you would think that the legal scholars, the people who did this, would...
Well, they did continue. They did continue. That's indeed what happened, and that's what Rav Shira Gaon is saying. But nevertheless, the vitality that's attached to a living legal institution that's involved with actual cases
disappeared.
So the word Torah can also mean to give directions, so to give...
Sure. Orders.
So those are things. So that word can also refer to something that occurred.
So well, I'm, okay.
It
came from
Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi.
Yeah, he translates Rav Yossi as Rav
Yossi. Okay. Yes.
was there some coincidence economic climate?
There was persecution. There was very, very serious persecution. Pogroms. Well, yeah, there was there was general disruption of the Jewish community. Okay, I now want to turn to we'll just read together, very little comment on my part, a short chapter in Professor Weiss's book, which is called Hitavot HaTalmud V'Shlemuto, the creation of the Talmud in its entirety. Okay? And then we will read from Dr. Efrati's book. Okay. She'elat Sidur Acharon Shel HaTalmud HaRav Ashi Kimasagro. Okay, this is now from a different book. This is, do you remember Professor Weiss from Hebrew University?
No. I remember his children.
Yes, Benji, the well-known mathematician.
Benji was the youngest one. There was the oldest one.
I only know Benji.
Because there was an older one who made Aliyah. I remember him from Bnei Akiva. He made Aliyah, and he became a tractor driver. He was a very smart guy. He was a physics major, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, Benji is a professor at the mathematics department at the Hebrew University. So I know him all these
years. Yeah, I remember him too.
Okay. So let's read what Professor Weiss has to say. She'elat Sidur Acharon Shel HaTalmud V'Rav Ashi Kimasadua. The question of the last redaction of the Talmud and Rav Ashi as its editor. According to our method, we don't at all come to the question of a last edition of the Talmud, because in front of us we see a history, a long continuous history of the Talmud, which starts from the beginning of in the early generations of the Amoraim and continues until the time of the Gaonim. But the idea that there was a last editor of the Talmud and Rav Ashi was this last editor is found in all of the introductory, in all of the books which are introductions to the Talmud. In every single introduction of the Talmud, starting from those which were written during the period of the Gaonim until those which were written by the latest Talmudic investigators, this particular idea is brought as an absolutely accepted principle which cannot be refuted. In all of them you will find the notion of the last editing, and with all of them Rav Ashi is called the last editor. This principle says that the Talmud that we have is as a complete literary instruction was made by Rav Ashi, and therefore our Talmud was created in the last generations of the Amoraim, and within it were embedded all of these Talmudic studies that were made during the yeshivot and the other yeshivot in Babel. And since the crown of antiquity hovers over this particular idea, because it's almost 1,000 years that people are talking about the last editing without anyone in all of these years questioning this item, it's impossible to pass in silence on this question and not to deal with it, this Professor Weiss. This idea includes two basic notions. One, that there is such a thing as a last edition, and secondly, that Rav Ashi was the last editor. And now we'll come to investigate each one of these items by itself. The idea of a last edition says that there was someone who did the work of editing. Therefore, this should include a certain number of activities, or at least some activity that one can call editing. And also, it's necessary that this actual act of editing be visible in the entire Talmud, because the Talmud is the item that was created by this so-called editing, by this last editor.
What is he saying?
He's saying that if there is such a thing as an editor of the Talmud, we should see what he actually did. And furthermore, if there is an editor of the Talmud, there should be some traces of his activities spread across the entire Talmud. That's what he said. If I edit a book,
you should have notes on the side or something.
Well, there should be some. What should be visible is that someone gathered a whole lot of material together, organized it into various different places, and one can see that there was some editing taking place. His claim, and I think that it's absolutely correct, is that there was never any editing of the Talmud. What in fact was happening was that the Talmud was a series of discussions which were then growing layer after layer, and that one sees in the earlier versions of the Talmud, that is, that one, if one investigates the Talmud all the way throughout, one can see discussions of the earlier Amoraim, which are then added upon by later generations and so on. So what you have is not a document, that's the claim that he's going to make, that it is not a document which someone sat down and said, I'm going to take what this guy said and put it here, and what this guy said and put it there, and organize it into one complete whole, but rather there was a body of discussion, and then this discussion is added to in one generation, and the next generation didn't touch really what was going on in the previous generation other than to comment on it, and then the next generation after that, and this process never had an official editor in any sense, nor did this process stop with Rav Ashi. That's this claim that he's making.
Is there a difference between a compiler and an editor?
Someone does compile?
He's saying that it was neither compiled nor edited.
A geological layer.
It was therefore it grew as geological layers or like a pearl with a creating. Yes. Because in the yeshivot, they would study the discussions of the previous generation, which were recorded either orally or in writing or in some form, and then a new body of discussion would be laid down on top of the previous body of discussion. And he'll argue the case now, so let's just listen to him arguing this particular case.
I thought they did make written versions so the students who were coming
yes.
for the Archei Kala could prepare them.
Right. There may have been unofficial written versions, but the text as a whole, that is the body of knowledge that we call today the Talmud, was not edited at some stage where someone said, I'm taking this and putting it here, or taking this and putting it there, or modifying a previous discussion, just adding to it. Let's read what he says. Now, it's possible that this activity would actually touch the body of the Talmud itself, the material which the last editor actually used. That is, that particular material that served as the building blocks for the construction, which then went under the eye of the, was then worked by the editor. And in this way, in this new editing, he introduced into these various blocks into the construction of the Talmud. In other words, that the organizer worked his sources and adjusted them to the construct to his Talmudic building that he actually built. And the material in the Talmud that we find in front of us is therefore in the shape that was given to it by this editor, the person who constructed the Talmud. And it's also possible that this activity of so-called editing didn't actually touch the material itself, but only its organization. And the material itself, that is the building stones or building blocks or the sources, remained in their original form. And the activity of the editor was just this, that he organized the sources according to some particular plan. And that at the most, he added here and there a little drop of his own in order to make the source, various different sources fit together and create some kind of a unity. Whether these little additions touch on a particular discussion and come to elaborate it, or whether they come to the relation between the various discussions and their presentation. But from our previous discussion in the previous chapters on the development and the existence of the sugya, of the discussion in the Talmud and its layers, it follows that there's no possible place for a last edit, that to say that a last editor touched this. In almost every single place, you can see the evolution of the discussion itself. Here and there, one can even see various different modes of development, whether in the question of a sugya, or whether an isolated statement, or with a whole layer. Similarly, it's sometimes possible to draw some broad conclusions and even general principles according to the methods of evolution. All of this shows that there isn't in the material itself any trace or mention of a work of a last editor or of a last edition. Here we find a long creative process in which all of the Amoraim of all the generations took part, and its whole character of this process says that in no way can you distinguish the evolution of the process from the material itself. Both of them, that is, the evolution of the material and the process, are just two sides of the same coin.
So they wrote as they were discussing.
Okay? And now to the second possibility, and that is that the editor, all that he did was to organize the sources and at the very least add a few additions here and there in order to develop the material. Already the development of the level of the layers of the sugya and the Talmud and its history shows that it is impossible to talk about a last editor of the Talmudic material in this way. That in the hands of the editor there was just a raw material of the various sources which said this or that other thing. This is not possible because the sugya and its various layers show that in almost all the sugyas, all of the various discussions in the Talmud went and developed a definite time in their expansion. And the time period which when this happened was one layer after another, and the layers of the Talmud shows that already in the earliest years we see that the entire Talmud represented an early layer upon which the different layers were attached. In other words, the Talmud as a whole, as a body, had already existed. It wasn't that to say that, you know, there was some little piece here and a little piece there which were then organized into Masechet Shabbat, or another little piece here and a little piece there that were organized into Masechet Bava Batra, and so on. Because we see that there was this uniform existence of the entire Talmud, which was then evolving layer after layer.
Not very clear.
What?
Adding on.
In other words, what he's saying, there was originally the Mishnah. That was edited and organized by Rebbe. Then there were discussions of the Mishnah, and they all follow the various different Mishnayot.
So it's already an order of learning.
Yes, but that order was simply following the order of learning, as we saw in Rav Shira Gaon, that they would study two Masechtot a year, and then every year for 30 years, go through everything, and then another level. But the fact, what he's saying is that these levels of development existed always within the framework of the different Masechet. It's not to say that there was a Masechet Makot which was created at one particular juncture and then something else which was created much later or much earlier. That each of the entire Masechet shows the simultaneous evolution. Therefore, it's not as if somebody took something from one place and another and then organized it into some edition at one particular time.
And they said there was no editor. I mean, I'm confused, because if it was in order, everything was developed according to the original path of the Mishnah.
It evolved. It evolved.
Yeah, but you didn't have to go with Shabbos and Yonam and mixed into Fulham and...
But you did. I mean, that's his whole point. His whole point was that you see that there are various items, for example, that are repeated. There are repetitions, one place here and something there.
An editor wouldn't have done
that. An editor wouldn't have done that. But if it was an organic body of material which was studied, with every 30 years you'd come back in the various different yeshivot and add to what went on before by a new discussion and so on. What this, his claim is that there was an edition of the Mishnah. This is the work that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and maybe his colleagues did. Then the Mishnah was studied in the various different academies, say in Eretz Yisrael and Rabba, and each discussion was then summarized or added to this body of material, and was then studied by the next generation, who would raise some questions about the previous material, maybe add some new material because new problems had arisen, and so on and so forth. But it wasn't as if there was someone had a huge storehouse of bodies of discussion which then came and took this body and put it here and organized it and edited it into a single thing. One is dealing with an evolutionary process rather than an editor. That's what he is saying.
Do they have 60 volumes?
We don't have Talmud Bavli on all of the Mishnah. Right, we don't have Talmud Bavli on any part of Taharot with the exception of Masechet Nidah, for example. So there are many different Masechtot for which we don't have a Babylonian Talmud.
So this was not discussed, or is it just that got mixed up with the other ones?
Probably not discussed all that much, all that serious.
Now, if there were two or three separate yeshivas, and each of them are doing this, there'd be different versions of the Talmud.
Right, but there were periods of time in which there weren't two separate yeshivot. Towards the end of the period, there were either just two, for example, and therefore it's not all that hard to imagine that the discussions from one and another come.
It's interesting that the Mishnah, which was edited, I can't think of hardly any repetition.
Right. Okay.
How does something like the Rabban say that the Rabban says that it's V'yomar It's hard for me to believe that Rosh Yeshiva would let him get away with the Yomar of Nachman, the Yomar of Nachman. It sounds to me like maybe this Sader, I don't know how to use that word, took these pieces that couldn't be fit in.
Or simply that in the course of the yeshiva, the study in the yeshiva, there are various different statements of Rav Nachman which are worth recording, and therefore they were had to be put somewhere in the process of learning. In other words, I'm not saying that someone didn't, at any given generation, someone didn't do something to add to the body of work, but that this was not something that was edited by one individual at some definite time. His main point is that this was an evolutionary process which went on layer after layer. Well,
does he prove he tries? But nowhere does he prove anything he said. He says it can't be what it is, and it gives you his shita.
No, this is unfair. I mean, I'm quoting from a summary on page 240 of a book in which he has spent the first 200 pages showing how the various sugyot all over Shas evolve one after the other. Okay. All right. Yes.
This very unusually creative synthesis did happen among the yeshiva, Sura, and the detail,
yeah.
A couple of others, or just the Sura?
No, and the various yeshiva, but there was interaction between the two. Okay. All right. So let's just read a little bit further in here. And from the other hand, this situation shows that even if we have in front of us a process that went on and continued for many, many generations, and various different chachamim partook in it, even people who copied things down from various different generations, nevertheless, one can't associate this to the credit of any particular editor. Because even the question of the additions for clarification of material, we see that we come here into the question of the evolution of the literary style of the Sugya and the Talmud. And on this we come to the question, to the issue of the analysis of the Talmudic material, and with various different forms, we come to the conclusion that this literary development of the Talmudic material and the Talmud was the result of an activity that went on by various different scholars on many different periods, which took hundreds of years. This process started already at the time of the Amoraim and continued throughout the entire period of the Sfarim, and wasn't completed even in the time of the Gaon.
Is there evidence for stuff that was inserted that way?
Sure. I mean, we have lots of things which even Rashi points out are things which are many generations after Rav Ashi. Therefore, he says, there's no activity in the creation of the Talmud which is possible to describe as the